Welcome back to the Drop Pod, a 40K podcast hosted by myself, Garrett, and my friend Blake. Today we're diving into the latest and greatest from GW, Arcs of Omen Vashtor.
The third series, right? Third one?
Yeah, the third book. This is the cutting edge, the bleeding edge of Games Workshop lore that is sort of developing the universe. This book was pretty good, I thought. It was more lore than the Abaddon one. I didn't get the Angron one, but you did, Blake, and it seems like the Abaddon one has kind of fallen short in the lore department compared to these other two.
I would agree. I mean, I was almost taken aback by how much content, from a lore point of view, was in the Angron one.
Yeah, there's a decent bit.
I appreciate it. I mean, again, Vashtor is a completely brand new character, and Angron really, haven't really heard much about him since, you know, the Heresy, so I appreciated it.
Yeah. You know what I realized reading this?
Yeah.
Was that, like, we're not going to get, like, a definitive conclusion, maybe, to this, because, you know, like, we have a Vashtor model now, which basically means that he's here to stay, and that, like, whatever plan he's working on is sort of probably always going to be in the works. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, and this is, they did the same thing in the end of 8th with the Psychic Awakenings. I will say, though, the Arcs of Omen, I think, are far superior than the Psychic Awakening ones, both in the game mode regarding boarding actions and just the overall lore. I never really even understood what was happening with the Psychic Awakening shit.
Yeah, I never read them because I got into the game after that and didn't want to buy an irrelevant, like, $60 book. So,
and it is irrelevant. It doesn't even scratch the surface.
Great, great. Well, it seems like if going off that, like, they've kind of stepped up these books here. Can you give us like a update or a look back into what happened at the end of the Angron book? Refresh us.
Yeah. So it kind of ends on probably one of the more darker tones that, and that's, you know, saying something in the 40K point of view. But essentially, Angron splits this ancient kind of second beacon for the warp. He basically splits it with the help of Big Daddy Korn. They both make the swing, and it basically gives Korn the power to put a murder curse across the whole entire sector, and basically makes everyone within the sector, other than some custodians and Grey Knights, become servants of Korn. So essentially he went back into the warp with just legions, the entire 4th Indominus fleet, I believe.
Yeah, like the whole thing just fell to Korn, basically.
Yep, we got Primaris Marines, yeah, you got the fucking Adeptus Sororitas Korn version just like thrown in there. And then at the same time he just threw Angron onto a different planet and just continued what he was doing.
Yeah, so we don't know where he is, right? He's just out there somewhere.
Yeah, he experienced absolute peace for the first time ever, no nails. And then when the pain came back, he was just on a different planet with just a bunch of soldiers looking at him like,
hello.
we weren't expecting you. And then he obviously just went, you know, murder on them.
That reminds me, I was playing Darktide and my buddy went down and I went over to revive him and I, like, was almost there and, like, someone was behind me and I turned around and then all of a sudden one of, like, the bosses was there, like a Beast of Nurgle was there. And I was like, wow, okay. Like, I was just looking there like literally a second ago. Like, this thing just appeared behind me.
Dude, those things are, like, ginormous too.
Yeah, they're huge. So, and needless to say, we did not finish that run. We died.
Yeah, I still want that glitch game to come out for console, but, you know, yeah, it never will.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to. I don't know if there's any plans for that, but anyway.
That's neither here nor there.
Yeah, we're going to get into Vashtor here. So, book starts, and it's sort of going over the whole sort of the chaos operation that's going on. It talks about a bunch of the different Bale fleets and their Arcs of Omen and what they're doing. It's kind of irrelevant to this story, but it tells a short story of Vashtor going onto this I almost want to say it's an Inquisition ship. I don't think it says it outright, but there is like someone serving an Inquisitor on the ship, and he sort of like teleports, like forces himself like a teleport onto like the teleportation pad or whatever, and he gets there, and he like takes a moment to take in his scenery and look around, and he notices like there's like a bunch of like tech adepts or whatever they are. They're like prostrated on the floor, like on all fours, like kneeling before him because they think he's like some manifestation of the Omnissiah. It's like, no, he's not. But I can see how they might get that, you know, a little mixed up.
Yeah, I mean, these guys are like bottom level kind of people. Like they don't know any different.
Yeah, and he is like a big like walking sort of machine. I mean, he's not like a robot, but he's like kind of looks like half human, half robot. He's kind
of
weird.
One of the community or kind of the community paint jobs, they actually didn't put his tabard on, and he is like all machine underneath. It's kind of like, it's kind of spooky.
Yeah, he's freaky looking for sure.
Yeah.
So he kills them anyway. He kills them, and then some Death Watch Marines teleport in like right behind him, and the lead one says Hydra Dominatus. So they aren't actually Death Watch; they're Alpha Legion, disguised as Death Watch, and they go off into the ship doing their little thing or whatever. Perfect. And Vastor sort of strolls through the ship, killing at will. You know, summoning little flesh metal, I don't know, maggots to devour everybody and tear them apart. And he gets to his like
version of Nurgleites kind of thing.
Yeah,
his little version of Nurgles.
Yeah. Yep. And they get to the last room, and in there he finds. So there's like someone, I can't remember what she's doing, but he basically like starts to interrogate. He like says a sort of like interrogative, something like that word or phrase. And she thinks it's like directed at her. And she's like, I will tell you nothing, Abomination. He's like, I'm not talking to you. And he just pushes his finger through her neck, like through her throat. And yeah, it's a little messed up. And so,
man, they're like these people on this ship are like they're really confused on who he is. Like one group's just gonna kneel, and the other one's just taking offense at like random ass words.
Yeah, I think the message got out by the time he got to her because he was just tearing people limb from limb. So he pushes his finger through her neck, and she dies obviously. And then he begins talking to like this huge array of cogitators, I guess, in the back of the room. And turns out that this cogitator array is AI, which in 40K does not mean artificial intelligence. It means abominable intelligence. And it asks this AI where the rock is. And the rock is like the fortress monastery. It is like the largest piece of like crust, I guess, left from Caliban that the Dark Angels, after Caliban blew up, decided to make their fortress monastery. It's like a giant ship. It's kind of similar, you know, in tone to a Space Hulk. You know, it's like this, they just retrofitted this rock to be a literal rock to be a ship. And that's how that little piece ends. So obviously this thing knows where the rock is. So this thing's name is Orak Myriad, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, so then it cuts to this planet. Sort of leaves that behind. It cuts to this planet called Marwyn's Reach, which has had terrible problems with, I guess, the disciples or this war band of Bellicor, people that have pledged themselves to Bellicor. They don't know that, but there's these people are like sort of just appearing and disappearing, and all over the planet. There's a whole nice knight household called Korvax that like seemingly just appear out of nowhere and like just terrorize a whole city. And they'll then just disappear into like shadows of form and go around them, and then they just disappear and they're gone again. And so this Marwyn's Reach calls out for aid because this is a big problem, and they don't get any attention until it comes to the point where they're missing their imperial tithe. No one pays attention until they're like, hey, where's your taxes? We need them. And they're like, well, you haven't noticed. We're basically under siege here.
Isn't that just the most like perfect way? That's how it works, right? Like you don't get support until it's like, oh shit, you didn't pay your taxes?
Yeah. So eventually, one of it's called Task Force 12 from an It's from the Indominus Crusade, with Ultramarines and Nova Marines and this Night Household called House Raven. Is sent to go aid Marwyn's Reach. Now, House Raven is the sort of other half of the house, the Chaos Night House of Korvax, that is on the planet. I don't think they know at the time that this is who they're going to fight, but it's kind of interesting that they're, you know, one side or two sides of the same coin or whatever. Mm. One of them has been sort of stolen and corrupted by Bellicor, and the other one has remained loyal to the Imperium. So, the Dark Angels also show up. And I think they don't, it says they didn't really, like, get ordered. They just kind of, like, intercept the messages coming from Marwyn's Reach and just decide to, like, they're just, like, sitting there outside. They're just, like, literally, it says that they're just sitting there, like, listening to, like, Vox channels and just meditating and, like, preparing for any battle that may arise.
They're just bored as fuck.
Just, like, I guess. They're just waiting. And then the Rock shows up. They, like, send signal to the Rock. Then the Rock shows up. And then, like, right after the Rock shows up.
Dude, it just sounds like you're saying Dwayne the Rock. Like,
the Rock. Yeah. I was trying to think of the Rock voice line or something like that. One of his little quips that he has. I just couldn't think of anything off the top of my head. Anyhow, so right after that, this Bale fleet shows up. And it is the one that Vashtor is piloting. And so, what we learn at this part of it is that he has basically retrofitted. He's given this AI its freedom, and he's sort of retrofitted an entire Ark of Omen with AI. So the AI is sort of like controlling the whole thing. And since the AI's name was Myriad Orlak, I can't remember which one it is. He names this Ark of Omen Orlak Unleashed. So that shows up. And this is like one of the greatest naval ambushes, like, of all time. Sorry, it's Orlak, my bad. Orlak Unleashed. It, like, basically pops out of the warp, like, right next. I mean, not right next to it, but, like, very, very close to the Rock. And it says this is, like, basically the greatest naval ambush of all time. And, of course,
there's no time for them to, like, react in any scope.
Yeah, so the Rock's like, holy shit, like, what is going on? Obviously, it's enemy. Like, sort of instantly engage in battle, and the Rock realizes that, like, if it just chills out here, like, away from the planet, like, it doesn't stand a chance. Like, it's just gonna lose. It's just completely outnumbered, outgunned everything by this Bale fleet. And so, it decides to withdraw to Marwyn's Reach, or, like, at least start approaching it. And it sort of sends out, like, all of its, you know, accompanying fleet, its cruisers and fighters and all that stuff. They sort of, like, all spread out. And so it makes the Arcfane decide whether he's going to push on towards the Rock and then get flanked basically on all sides by all of the extra ships and whatnot. Or, you know, or if he's going to, like, disperse his own resources to deal with all these, you know, fleeing ships. Not fleeing ships, but they're sort of just scattered. And right. So he basically has to deal with them. So the Arcfane sends out all of his, you know, support craft and whatever to go deal with all these other ships. And it starts heading toward the Space Hulk Orlak Unleashed starts heading towards the Rock. This also goes over Azrael crossing the Rubicon. He, like, dies, like, twice while he's crossing the Rubicon Primaris.
It's totally fitting.
Yeah. I think it's just everyone complaining about no one dying to the Rubicon Primaris after they said, like, 66% of the people die like, trying to cross it or whatever. And then, like,
You have a name.
Yeah, unless you have an important name in a book, then you're mint. And you don't have to worry about it. So it says he dies the first time, dies a second time. And then he's only revived because the Watchers in the Dark, like, intervene and, like, bring him back. You know who the Watchers in the Dark are?
Yeah, the little gremlins that they're with, right?
Yeah, like, the little rogue people. They kind of look like little Jawas.
Yeah, like, what are they, though? Like,
I think they're meant to be mysterious. Like, we don't know what they are. There is a piece of lore, I don't remember if it's from a book or whatever. I think it's from a book, where someone who was a particularly, like, potent psyker encounters one and, like, is sort of sizes it up. And these things are not, if you haven't seen them, they're, like, little tiny. They're, like, dwarfs, basically. but not stout. They're just like literally a Jawa, like in robes.
They're like little servants. They're on his new character, like holding the sheath of his blade.
Yeah. And this psyker says, like, wow, like, I don't need, this thing terrifies me. Like, I don't even want to be near it because it is so insanely powerful. Like, its psychic potential is, like, so potent. Like, I don't even want to be close to it.
So they save him?
So they basically save him. That's the only reason he survives the Rubicon, crossing the Rubicon, is because the Watchers in the Dark intervene. It also says that, which we debated this because we didn't know if Perturabo was a demon Primarch or not. It says in here that he is a demon Primarch. And I read his name and I was like, holy shit, is he going to like show up? Because I haven't read like demon Primarch Perturabo lore like literally anywhere, I don't think. but it says that Vashtra and Perturabo reach an agreement where the demon Primarch will lend a substantial force of iron warriors to like the sieging of the rock. And so this Bale fleet, this force, this Ark of Omen has it has Word Bearers, Black Legion, and Iron Warriors all fighting with it. And obviously it has demons too and cultists and the whole nine yards.
See, I thought Perturabo kept his like sanity. Or like his you know what I mean? Like his
Yeah. You know, I think
he kept his form, but
I think what happened was I think this could be completely wrong, but it's something close to this. I think he was like struck by like some blade or something like that, or like he was cursed somehow and he was like slowly dying. And basically to prevent himself from dying, he had to embrace demonhood. I don't know. It's a good question. I have no idea. You'd think if Vashra was a god, it'd probably be him, but he's not. So, and it doesn't make him sound like Perturabo answers to Vashtor. So
right, it sounds like it almost sounds like the opposite.
Yeah, so I'm wondering who's giving him. Yeah, I'm wondering who's giving him, like who's blessing him with demonhood. I don't know. It's a good question. It's not. Yeah, you can't imagine who it is. It's not Nurgle. It's not Khorne. Can't. Yeah, I don't know. Interesting. I guess it could be like maybe Belakor could give someone demonhood. I'm not saying it's Belakor, but like Belakor does wield like some sort of power like that. He might be able to like give someone gifts like that.
He is similar to like Abaddon, but like obviously a lot more fallen in regards to demonhood, right? I know we're kind of getting off topic here, but like he doesn't really serve one, he serves himself, but has power because of them all.
Yeah, so maybe maybe it's the power of all four, like sort of vested in him. Maybe they all sort of came together and say, hey, listen, this guy's powerful enough, we'll each give him a little portion of our power. And because he's, you know, aligned against humanity.
Right, let's put our differences aside for the... You know, that doesn't sound too Chaos Demon-y, but maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe, who knows? I would be really interested to learn about that.
Oh, 100%, yeah. I mean, he was a cool Primarch. He was very, very prevalent at the end, kind of thing. Like, in regard, he fought everyone, it seems like.
Yeah, he was all up in the Siege of Terra, bro. He owned that shit.
Yeah, he did. But, alright, so there's several different legions supporting Vashtar.
Yeah, and they're all with the Ark of Omen. They're all there. And of course, like I said, there's cultists and demons and all this other crazy shit that comes along with all that nonsense. So, the Rock is sort of defending itself or retreating. Orlak Unleashed is, firing towards the Rock. It is going full speed, and it says that Vashtar, so the Rock has this special like void shield called the Gorgon's Aegis, which is like some dark age of technology relic that nobody understands how it works. They just know that it can work and that it is working, and like if it was ever to be destroyed, there's no way they could ever replace it, and it's like never like been destroyed before. Like it's like basically impervious. But Vashtar, being Vashtar, has fucking probably studied the thing throughout the millennia or whatever. And it said that he built like this. So it said there's this thing. He built this weapon called the Unmaker. The Unmaker on Orlak Unleashed. And
how can they make up a name called Orlak Unleashed and then just come with a name of the Unmaker?
The Unmaker. Yeah, I know. So it says there's like five projectors on this thing. So I'm kind of like imagining this big, like circular, just Space Hulk, just a big, giant, massive ships just glued together. And then it says there's 5 projectors, dude. And then I'm like, okay, now I'm getting real Death Star vibes here. Like, this thing's like projecting, like, you know, 5 beams into one or whatever. I don't think it's actually doing that, but that's just kind of how I looked at it. And now everyone that's listening will also look at it like that too.
Can't unsee it.
Yeah. But it says like each projector is powered by, like, he like makes like a flesh metal cage or something like that. And it's like he like using some relic. I don't remember the exact details, but basically each one is powered by like the warp. Like there's like a warp rift like powering each one. And so he fires it at the rock. And after like a couple times firing it, it destroys the Aegis. It like tunes into the empiric resonance of the the Gorgon's Aegis and destroys it, and it shuts off. And then the rock, then everyone on the rock's like, oh shit, this is not good. We are wide open now. So then he, what happens next? I think they basically all just launch all the ships, all the borne torpedoes, all the ships, and they're going, full boarding action here on the rock. And actually there is a moment in classic Chaos fashion where Bashor is just riding on top of Orlak Unleashed.
Yep. Aragorn did it. Why not?
Yep.
Fucking Bashor, yeah.
Yep. So he's actually still flying towards it. He destroys the shields. He's flying towards it. There's a little scene where there's like a huge dogfight, like a bunch of void warfare happening around him. And he just like points his hammer at like a Dark Angel's like fighter or something like that, and just destroys it. Mm-hmm. And it's like flying all around him. He destroys one, and like he says, there's like bodies like tumbling off like the armor, like glass canopies of the other ships, which is kind of funny. So like I said, all the boarding parties launch simultaneously, and then he kind of just like floats, I guess, through space and just kind of floats down to the rock. And the rock is humongous, by the way. It is huge. It's bigger. It's bigger than the Ark of Omen is, which is like already huge.
Right.
And so he lands on the surface of it, and it says there's 9 chariots being pulled by Tzeentch demons, which are pulling like this big like crystal prism. And so they get to the rock. They set the prism down, and he hits it with his hammer twice, and it opens a warp portal on the rock, and then a bunch of demons come pouring out of the warp portal. So now he has, like, you know, endless reinforcements on the rock itself. Which is... Sounds not good right now.
Yeah.
Sounds very bad right now. Sounds like things are going very badly for the Dark Angels. So it ends with... he sort of runs into some Deathwing Terminators. And he says, "Let us unmake you." Then he's the unmake. He's gonna unmake people. With his unmaker, not with the unmaker, but he's all about unmaking things. So presumably, a bunch of Deathwing Terminators die.
It sounds like they're unmade.
They have been unraveled. So there is now warfare inside of the rock, and then also on the surface of the rock. So there's like this, it's called like the Tower of Angels or something like that. It sounds like it's like their main strategium, where this thing is like the only thing left on the rock that has any sort of void shields, and there's a war to get to the strategium, and there's also a more important war being fought within the depths of the rock itself to get to whatever crazy thing Vashtor's at, like in the deepest, darkest corner of the rock, you know, in some crazy... Like, he may be after something that the Dark Angels don't even know is there. You know what I mean?
Right. Because isn't that what... That's what happened on the first one in Abaddon. Like, they were, like, just randomly... when they attacked that random fucking space marine camp, like, they were just, like, fucking defending themselves.
They're like, yeah, what is like, going on? Why do they hate us so much?
He just, like, took some random, like... random relic leaning up against the side of the fucking armory.
Yeah, it was like a statue.
They just fucking murdered everyone for it.
Yeah. So, we never actually find out what Vashtor is after, but it's sort of spoken about like in hush-hush tones. Like, Abaddon doesn't even want to say what it is.
That's kind of annoying.
Yeah. So, we know that like somewhere deeper than the rock, it gets into more detail later, but there's like things that just should never see the light of day ever again. And so, obviously, it's gonna be one of those things. And so that is where like the defense is most important. Obviously, defending like this central command hub is important, but there's you know, more importance heaped upon defending these like catacombs or crypts or whatever you want to call them, that they're probably prisons or whatever that have all these crazy things in them. They also, the Dark Angels realize that they are basically completely overwhelmed. Like, it's, they're going to fight to the man and they're probably going to lose, but their chief goal is to not let anyone down into, there's a word for it, to lower depths. Yeah, the lower depths. So there's a pretty cool picture in here. It's two pages of like the layout of part of the rock where a lot of the fighting happens. The main fight happens in the Galerium Exactor, before the Nameless Gate. And Azrael sort of gives everyone a command, like, nobody is to pass through the Nameless Gate. Like, if someone is, you should be dead already. If someone's passed through the Nameless Gate, you're dead. Because that's the only way they should be going through there. So, this is another cool name.
Is Azrael, like, the only, like, named Death Dark Angel character there?
No. There's, so he's the Supreme Grandmaster, I believe. And then there's Master Lazarus, which I think is, like, probably the one right below him. There's Belial. Oh, who's the other guy? There's another one. There's basically another... Ezekiel. Yep. He's the librarian, I think. And then Belial's the chaplain, the chief, like, interrogator chaplain. So it's a pretty cool schematic of, like, the whole... like, where, like, the main battle, what's going on. I'm not going to go over that because it's more imagery than actual explaining. So, in this fight, Azrael basically goes down to the Nameless Gate. He arrives there. He sort of flanks this force of Chaos Space Marines that are there, and one of them is Zorphus. And Zorphus is, like, Abaddon's, like, right-hand sorcerer. And Azrael kills him. So, I didn't know this. He's basically, like, engaged in hand-to-hand combat with Zorphus, and Zorphus goes to, like, blow him away, but, like, basically, he rolls, like, a super smite. He rolls 2d6 and gets a 12, smites him. But Azrael's helmet protects him. So, I guess there's some sort of, like, void, I don't know, something in Azrael's helmet, which is kind of cool.
Man, I'd be so pissed if I was the fucking wizard or the psyker there.
Oh, I know. It's brutal. Fucking
get the super smite, and the guy's like, nah, dude, my helmet.
My helmet. Like, you haven't seen this thing?
You should pass the Rubicon. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. So they actually do say in this that he's not fighting at full capacity because of, like, how much of a toll, like, the Rubicon Primaris has taken on him.
Interesting.
Yeah. So,
I mean, I guess I get it. You know, he's died twice, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to suck. It's got to suck one way or the other. I mean, no matter who you are, yeah.
Yeah, no.
So after that, Vashtor does arrive down there. Basically, there's a bunch of paragraphs about Vashtor just wading through people and doing Vashtor things and commanding machines that he shouldn't be commanding, and pulling people with his hammer and blowing them up and all this other crazy stuff. There is one sentence here. You know, every now and then you, like, run across a sentence that, like, really sums up, like, a character or, like, the setting or something like that. That's, like, just worth mentioning. So this one sums up Vashtor pretty well. It's just first two sentences of this paragraph. The siren song from behind the obsidian gates drew Vashtor ever onward. He saw the beings who fought so tenaciously to stop him as but impediments, irksome equations to be reduced to a sum of zero and then bypassed. Like, your whole life, like, even if you're like a Deathwing Terminator, like one of the most elite Space Marines to ever live, to Vashtor, you're just like a nobody. Just completely, you're an ant I'm going to step on as I'm walking down the sidewalk. I don't even notice you.
So you're just numbers. You're just numbers equaling zero that can be taken apart.
Yeah. So
it's pretty cool.
That was a nice little line. I figured that one kind of hit.
I do think he's a pretty cool. I've been happy with how they've presented Vashtor.
I like him.
A little more content on it too, because you got the book. But
yeah, no, this one gives you much better insight into who he is. And there's a lot of, throughout the whole thing, there's a lot of, like, he's been orchestrating this for what seems like literally millennia in, like, mortal years or whatever. But to him, like, who could just perceive time, like, outside of time, he just sits in the warp and just does his thing. It's like no time at all, but in, you know, in real space, it takes like thousands of years to play out. And he's like influencing this one person over here, and he's like making a cult rise up over here, and he's giving this other person his gifts and making them look like a war band leader or some sort of chaos lord. And they're going, he's sending them off to some mission, and they're recruiting people or whatever. And they're all like little tiny pieces of the puzzle that he's been assembling for hundreds or thousands of years at this point.
Right. And it was, to him, it was just one game of chess. Like,
yeah, easy. To him, all these things were just like, no problem. And they weren't even like significant. So this point, Bashtor is locked in combat with Azrael. And Azrael obviously realizes that he cannot defeat Bashtor, because Bashtor is a fucking giant demon, almost a god.
Right, yeah, ascending quickly at this point.
Which, you know, is interesting. Why don't we ever see, like, maybe it's just not in their best interest for, like, Khorne or Nurgle to, like, just manifest in real space? You know, like if Bashtor is so close to becoming a god, and he became a god, like, would he still be, like, would he still come into real space? You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and I think that's kind of why that Angron, end of the Angron, was so, like, holy shit. Like, we haven't seen any sort of real, true manifestation from these gods, other than, like, petty influences and petty rivalries. Yeah. But, like, Khorne literally just, like, got out of his throne and was just like, nope, I'm gonna split this fucking, like, entire galaxy in half, and I'm just gonna kidnap, like, soldiers bred to worship the Emperor.
Yeah, that's good. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, so I guess it's not the same as what I'm thinking. Like, Khorne didn't actually just show up in his real form.
No,
he just sort of exerted himself through Angron, but yeah,
right. Like, that's, if they could get to that point, like, there's nothing stopping them, but like, they must not be able to. And I think I see what you're saying.
Maybe,
like,
they're just too deeply rooted in the warp to, like, actually do that.
Oh, they must. Yeah, I mean, they were born by it, so they must be bound by it to some degree.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, if Bashtor were to ascend to that level, would he be bound to it?
Yeah, those, I don't know.
Interesting philosophical questions.
Yeah, Warhammer philosopher here. Yeah. Put that on the resume. All right. So at this point, the rock, this whole time the rock has been hurtling towards the planet. And don't forget, Task Force 12 from the Indomitus fleet or Indomitus Crusade is there. And that includes Ultramarines, Nova Marines, and this House Raven. And so it's finally getting close enough. People are, like, on the way. And there's some sort of, like, warp interference. Like, all the lights on the rock dim and, like, go out for a second. And everyone notices it, but nobody realizes, like, what it is. And even Bashtor doesn't realize what it is. And, which is kind of concerning, because he's, like, so, like, tied into the warp and what's going on. So, basically, like, just like on the planet below, like, a bunch of shadows appear, and then, like, all of a sudden, there's, like, a bunch of traitor space marines just chilling. Like, they're just standing there. And they just start engaging everyone indiscriminately. And it's basically all of Bellicor's followers. So there's Word Bearers, Black Legion. There's someone else there too. But they just say that some of the Dark Angels that are there and watch them show up whisper, like, oh shit, it's the Fallen. So I don't know if there's traitor Dark Angels in there. Probably is. So they show up and just throw a wrench in all the plans. So now there's basically two sides fighting, and then all of a sudden there's, like, a wedge, like, just drove in between them, and now there's a third opponent, and they're fighting everybody. And this really fucks up Vashor's plans big time. And so Vashor's really angry, not that the fact that these people are here, but when he sees, like, the shadow and, like, the marks of Bellicor on them, that's what really makes him angry. He's like, are you fucking kidding me, dude? This guy. That's what sends him over the edge.
Yeah, because they, well, I mean, clearly they have some sort of rivalry. I mean,
yeah,
it wouldn't really make sense if a demon didn't have a rivalry with another demon.
Yeah, and they're both, like, really close. They're, like, they're both, like, the pinnacle of their form, you know what I mean? Like, the last step for each of them is, like, becoming a god. And so, like, it's like two lieutenants fighting for the position of captain, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Except in a much more hostile environment.
A little bit.
Yeah, so
They're not going to shake hands after the fight.
No. And so this also obviously, basically disengages Vashtor from Azrael, of course, saves him. Can't be having main characters die off, right? Mm-mm. And no. So, Vashtor, like shadowy tendrils, like sort of start coming up out of the ground or whatever, out of the floor, and like are pulling him down to the floor. And he's basically pulled back to the surface of the rock. So now he's back on the surface. All of his forces down below are presumably being destroyed or slaughtered or whatever, fighting for their lives. And he's back on the surface. And then Melkor is standing there. He's just waiting for him. And there's some really good banter between the two of them. I'm not going to go through it, but it's basically them just hurling insults at each other that are pretty funny. Kind of makes, like, they're like, so, like, above humanity and just the mortal perception.
Yeah.
It just makes everyone feel, like, completely useless. There's some really cool artwork in here, too, of them sort of standing on top of, like, this platform fighting. But... okay, it's a bitter battle. They're fighting. Neither one of them has the upper hand. basically, yeah, his forces are struggling. And at this point, he knows that there's no way he's gonna finish his goal. This relic that he's after is gonna have to wait till another time because his shit is completely fucked. It's Belicor threw a wrench in his plans, and there's no recovery from it.
Does Belicor like? Kick his ass, or like is it like a pretty like well matched fight?
He does like stab him a few times, and I can't remember what Vashtor does. I think he's like, oh, you know what he's doing? I think he's like harnessing like some sort of plasma, like batteries or cannons from like the plasma guns and shit around him, or tanks or whatever. And because there's like an all out war on the surface of this thing. There's tanks and fucking demon engines and flyers and infantry, and the whole nine yards is battling on the surface of the rock. And so he's like pulling from plasma, and there's like all these shadows around him. Like Belicor is like a big shadow around him, and he's like just sort of flowing around him and like reaching out and stabbing him and running a blade through him and whatnot. And so he's like lighting the whole thing up with like plasma and electricity, and he's like leaving one spot like untouched by the plasma electricity. And of course, that's where Belicor's gonna show up. So he like swings his hammer down and catches Belicor right there. Because that's sort of where he's directing him. Azrael uses this like moment, like this brief moment of like, holy shit, I'm not fighting a giant demon anymore, to like go on the Vox and like rally all the Dark Angels, because now the Fallen are there, which is like the whole reason for Dark Angels existing is to just get rid of the Fallen, like their biggest secret. Right. And so the Dark Angels fight with like more fervor than they had before. They rally to this call. So, same time, Task Force 12 shows up. So there's Ultramarines, Nova Marines, House Raven, Chief Librarian Tigurius is there, and the Ultramarines. So House Raven is now fighting their, like, Chaos, like, their counterpart, their old fucking, the rest of their Night Household, their old buddies and pals that have fallen to Belicor. They're fighting them. It's kind of completely not relevant to the story. It's just kind of like a neat little, like, hey, they know each other already. Doesn't have any impact in the story other than that. This point, Belicor is like, yeah, dude, I did it. Like, basically, I'm just griefing you. So he gives Vashtor the middle finger and just dips out. So, yeah, he takes all his forces and leaves. And now Vashtor is left with... just his crippled forces and some really pissed off Dark Angels. And so he retreats as well. He says, I'm out of here. He retreats as well. So yeah, it's kind of, when Belicor showed up, I was like, wow, this is kind of sick. Like, shit is going down right now.
I did not see that coming. Yeah. I mean, like, and before nice they used him, because I thought, you know, he was a pretty cool potential model and like story.
Yeah.
It was kind of nice to see it.
Yeah, and at that point when he shows up, Vashtor, I didn't mention it, is like so close to his goal. Like, he is at the Nameless Gate, which is the gate that Azrael says, like, no one is passing the Nameless Gate unless you are dead. Like, you better die at the foot of this gate. And Vashtor is like there fighting Azrael. And that's when Belicor intercepts. That's when the rock gets close enough for Belicor to just, you know, zip up there and do his thing. So yeah, that part was very cool. I like that quite a bit. So then it ends with him retreating. He's, you know, a bunch of Space Marine shuttles come grab, or try to grab most of the Chaos Marines that are there. He's hoping to like salvage some sort of the force that Abaddon lent him. Ultimately, not many of them get off. He does escape. He goes back to Orlak Unleashed. It has been like completely ravaged by the guns of the Rock, because the Rock is obviously humongous. It has even the guns on the outside are said to be like crazy relics, like archaeotech that we just don't know. Like, we can't replicate it, but it's still working for us. So we're going to keep it working. So Orlak Unleashed has been ravaged. He's able to get to it and retreat and get away. So then it cuts to the final story. You know how each one of these books sort of ends with two or three pages, maybe four pages on like one person or like what they're seeing and what they're going through. It ends up on this guy named Durga. Who is a Chaos Space Marine who has been captured by the Dark Angels. He's being interrogated like down in the crypts or whatever. And it sounds pretty shit, dude, honestly. Like, he's in this completely dark room. Like, there's no light. Even, like, he can't perceive anything even with his, like enhanced Space Marine senses. Can't perceive anything. And, like, once in, like, he doesn't even know how long, like, someone opens the door. There's, like, a blinding light. And then there's an interrogator chaplain, like, just asking him questions and just beating the shit out of him. And, it says, like, all of a sudden he has this, like, compulsion to tell them, because they're asking him, like, you know, where, like, why'd you guys come here? Like, what are you looking for? What did he want? And where did he go? Talking about Vashtor. And he's, after, like, presumably months of being interrogated like this, he finally comes up with the answer that he has gone to the Somnium Stars. I don't know where the Somnium Stars are, but that's where he's gone to. And, cuts to the interrogator chaplain, and he's like, well, he said that he went to the Somnium Stars, and it's kind of coincidence because now all of the other people we're interrogating are also saying that. So they know, like, it's a plant. Like, Vashtor has been, like, planted this little, like, seed in their minds, and, like, that's what they're saying.
Right, that when they break, they basically just give this false.
Well, that's the thing. They don't know if it's false or not, and it's actually where he is, but he's just playing on the fact that it's, like, is it, like, a double cross? Is it true? Is it not true? Is it a trap? What's the deal? And so that's what he's playing on. And then it also, after that, it goes to Abaddon, who is, I don't know where he is, but he's just slaughtering some Admech. Really just fucking them up. And they're dumping all their bodies into this pit. And then there's like some people like along the outside of the pit conducting like a seance. And, like, all of the metal pieces and, like, the flesh from the bodies in there, like, twist and break and snap and form into, like, Vashtor's face, like, in this pit so that Abaddon can talk to him. It's, like, how they, like, conjured up, like it's like a 41st Millennium Chaos Zoom meeting. That's how you talk to people. You just have to sacrifice, like, 100, like, metal and flesh people, metal half people, half robots into a pit.
God damn.
And you can talk to your buddy. So yeah, they talk. There's some really good banter between them. And
Abaddon can't be happy.
He's not very happy, but he can't really like what is he gonna do to Vashtor? Like, he can't really do anything. Like, they both need each other at this point. Vashtor has the keys kind of to committed. The arcs and so Vashtor has the keys to the arcs, which Abaddon obviously wants, and then Abaddon has, like, all these forces and people that are, like, loyal to him that Vashtor also wants. So they're kind of, like, locked in. They both need each other to make this work. Otherwise, it's just dead in the water. And at one point, Abaddon goes to say, like, what it was that they were looking for on the rock. And he just, like, cuts off in the middle of it. And he's like, I can't even say it. I don't even trust who, like, my own guys. Like, what if they're listening? Like, if the wrong person hears this, it could be, like, a disaster. So I don't know what that means. I don't know if that's something to do with a lion or not, but whatever it is, they don't even want to talk about it. He doesn't want to say it to, like, Vashtor or, like, to his face, to his conjured up Zoom face. Oh, it also says that Bellicor is one of Abaddon's lieutenants. Like, he, like, answers to Abaddon in some sort of way, which completely caught me off guard. I thought he was just acting, like, completely rogue. Which he was. Like
I have more questions. I have more questions about Belagor than I do, you know, than I did before.
Yeah, I think obviously he was acting rogue, but if he was like teamed up with Abaddon, his petty squabble with Vashtor takes precedence over whatever allegiance he's pledged to Abaddon.
That's a good point too. Yeah.
So that I thought that was interesting. He said he was one of his lieutenants. That's exactly what it said. It said he's one of Abaddon's lieutenants. So that was interesting. It also spoke of upcoming raids into Ultramar, like from different arcs of Omen, raids into Ultramar, Medusan Reach, Ultima Macaria, and the Damocles Gulf. So I'm assuming that's what we're gonna get next. That's how it ends. That's what he's talking about.
Also, the Damocles Gulf must be with the Tau, aren't they? Right around that area.
They are near there. That wasn't our last, or that wasn't the Tau episode that we have yet to release. But they may even own it. I don't know. I don't know if their next sphere of expansion or some of their spheres have brought them to control it. I know that their second one like pushed through it, and then the Damocles Crusade like completely pushed them back on the other side.
Yeah, right. But now they have that tunnel.
Yeah, that I don't remember where that goes to, but it's not there.
Right,
it's not there. So that's how the book ends. The rock has been ravaged. It's not destroyed by any means. It's still functioning, but it needs a lot of repairs. There's a couple scenes where, like, I think in that last sort of room where they're fighting, they've like there's like huge statues of like some of like the greatest of the chapter of the Legion, and like they purposefully like destroy the statues with melta charges and topple them over to like create like defenses for the defenders for the dark angels that are defending the Nameless Gate. So that was kind of cool. That's how it ends. Vashtor has got his pee-pee slapped by the dark angels and Belagor, and yeah. So, and of course the Ultramarines had to save the day as usual. Man, came in.
Mm-hmm.
So,
they're obviously the best faction. No questions about it, right?
Yeah, you know, it really translates to the tabletop too. You know, their rules are just phenomenal. And plus one leadership is just, chef's kiss.
Huge.
Yeah. Super relevant, you know?
I really enjoyed that. I'm enjoying every one of these. So, and I guess I kind of wanted him to be a little more successful. Like
I did too, actually.
I guess that like Angron was almost like so successful, like I would have expected at least like a victory, maybe not as massive or dominant as Angron, but like a victory.
Yeah, because like, he basically didn't get anything. He went in there
other than fucked around by Belagor and like.
Yeah, he got owned in there, which is kind of sad. I was hoping that he was like. I was hoping there was going to be like more consequences for the Rock and the Dark Angels. You know what I mean? Like I was hoping there's going to be some real loss other than okay, we have to basically task our servitors to fixing the Rock now. That's like all they got basically. And right, obviously they lost like, a bunch of guys too, but still.
Yeah, I mean they had everything against them. Like I mean, a fucking Balefleet showed up like next to them. They were just like chilling, making some breakfast, and they're just like, oh. Oh shit!
Hello there. yeah. I wish I feel like it would have been. I mean, I'm sure it ties into the rest of the story and how it's gonna go, but it seems like Vashtor at least could have gotten down there and like maybe found what he was looking for and then got out without destroying the rock. He doesn't really care about whether the rock is alive or not or working or not, even the Dark Angels exist or not. He just wants this artifact or relic, whatever he's after, this key fragment, and that's all he wants. He just wants to get it and get out. If they listen, you can have it, just don't kill anybody, he would just walked in, grabbed it, and then left. So, I feel like he could have, maybe he could have orchestrated that somehow, but I'm sure there's, obviously, it's going to tie into the rest of the story, the fact that he doesn't have this one.
Yeah, but, so. And I'm sure it will, but for me, like, the thing that was the most, like, the best thing about these stories has just been the fact that they can, like the Imperium is truly... has their backs against the wall, like, and like between like Abaddon even just deploying and fucking shit up, and then Angron, and like that's what I kind of wish they went through that, and then maybe like the last book have a light of hope, and then go right into 10th.
Yeah,
with kind of like the next step.
Yeah, yeah, no, I like that. Or like set it up for like 10th edition, like this is what's playing out throughout 10th edition.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like they kind of did that with 8th edition with the Sacred Church of Maledictum, but it wasn't like a story that was playing out. It was more just like, here's like the altered galaxy because of what happened.
Right. Yeah, so, and I am hoping that like, well, yeah, I'm kind of getting off topic here, but like we're going more into the game, but like I hope it's an index point of view where like you can just pick up 10th edition and really just continue to play out like battles and like have them be genuine fun that can like actually kind of tell a story, not just like, hey, here's 10th edition and here's the new Space Marine book and the new Necron book. Now they're the best thing.
Yeah.
Have fun playing against them.
And then, yeah, like, that would suck.
And then the Chaos, who is like actually really flavorful and can play both ways, gets left in the fucking dark while their story is the one being played out in 10th.
Yeah. Which we should say, in this book, there is also more rules for boarding actions that you can like play out, like the Siege of the Rock. We go through like each step of it in boarding actions games, which is pretty cool.
Whose rules are in it?
There are Admech, Necrons, Chaos, Demons, Tyranids, Gene Stealer Cults, and Death Guard.
I might ask you to send me the picture of the Death Guard one.
Yeah. Some stratagems, some rules, adaptations, special enhancements. That's it for them.
Yeah. And I definitely wouldn't say, you know, again, from like a review point of view, you need one of these books. It can be any one of the books to play the game. And then you just really need the terrain. But I think the game's still definitely worth it. This is kind of why I feel like I'm enjoying it, is that this is definitely for the people who like the lore and are more interested in the lore.
Yeah.
I think we're providing a service where people don't have to go and buy a $60 book to get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's kind of where the sweet spot is. No one wants to pay $60 for one of these books, but they want to know what's happening. So yeah. I've enjoyed it from like the reading point of view, and I'm definitely, you know, it's going to be nice between the two of us. We're going to have a full set of some really good looking books.
Really cool stories. So I can sit on my shelf and I can never read them again. It'll be great.
Just tell my kids not to touch them, you know?
Yeah. Don't touch that. Yeah, I like the lore, but I do not like the $60 price tag for these fucking... I mean, the book is... Don't get me wrong. As far as books go, from an objective book standpoint, they're extremely high-quality books. But they don't need to be. Like, it's not even 100 pages. It's 96 pages. And it's $60. It's hardcover. It's not great art, but goddamn.
And, like, yeah, I mean, like, you don't even have any of the armies on the other side of that book for the rules. So you don't care about the rules.
No.
And, honestly, like, the missions are relatively interchangeable. I mean, like, I was showing you some of the ones on the Angron one. And there are some definitely fun potential narrative ones, like, between, like, a jailbreak or, like, take the store, like, the weapon room or the armory. And there's definitely some cool ones where you can think of, like, some fun narrative for. But, like, that's far and few between. There's not a lot of people saying, let's get together and play some narrative boarding actions.
Yeah. And only the Abaddon one has like the actual boarding actions rules. Well, at least maybe the Angron one has them, but this book does not have the boarding action like game rules. It has extra faction rules and it has missions, but it doesn't have like the core rules for boarding actions.
Yeah, and honestly,
I'm it's not sure worth picking up just for the missions.
No, definitely not worth picking up for them. Especially at some point, I would imagine it's going to be online to some capacity.
Yeah, it's going to Wikipedia. If you're picking up, you should not be picking up any book for 9th edition right now. I would not be doing it. Yeah. I would not be buying any codexes, any rule books, or anything for 9th edition at the moment. Because they're going to be outdated very soon, I think. Allegedly, June 24th, 2023.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, we are definitely not inside track people, so don't hold us to it.
No. But that's the word on the street here.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that, Dave, through. I mean, anyone who follows any of the bigger ones. I know one of the people I follow, he slipped it on a stream, so like the date. So
whoops. Whoopsie daisy. I didn't mean that.
Yeah. He didn't even go back to say whoops. He just let it just I mean, he's
let it out.
Steered right into the rut and drove right into the tree on top of it and just said, it's happening. Let's keep going.
Hell yeah. What a king.
But yeah, well, they might not be too happy about it, but we'll see. I mean,
yeah, I'm excited for it.
I am too. We can probably theory craft what's going to happen, but
yeah,
you know, we played a game the other day and that was one of the more fun games. To me, it's just still very, so dense with rules. I mean, especially Ultramarines, like with Gilliman and your...
Dude, his stat sheet's insane. Like, his rerolls are... And all of his rules and auras and stuff. It's like, holy crap.
And then your Tech Marine had, like several different auras. Yeah. And then several different rules it does at the beginning of the games.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I hope they condense that. But, you know... I liked 9th. I liked 8th, though. But a lot of the people who told me, who have been in the game for a long time, say that if you liked 8th, you're going to like 9th because it's similar, just kind of more compact. But there's, like, the old school people are still, like, much more involved in, like, the 6th edition games or the 5th edition games.
The more granular ones, more granular games.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I appreciate that. But, you know, we'll see what 10th holds.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, that's it for Vashtor, Arcswoman of Vashtor.
Yeah. What do we got for the morale phase today, Garrett?
So I watched this video. Yeah. This is YouTube channel. It's amazing. It's called Mark Rober. And this guy used to be a engineer for NASA. Now he quit and just has a YouTube channel now. He basically invents a lot of stuff and just makes a lot of cool contraptions and whatnot. But this one, he was just dedicating to like someone that he thinks, or like a company that he thinks is doing like something that's just amazing. And he did a video on this company called Zipline. And dude, it is so sick what they're doing. So this dude, who is an absolute Chad, grew up in Rwanda, and survived the Rwandan genocide. It was out of his whole family. It was like him and some siblings and his mom and dad. He was the only one that survived. He has a scar on his head from where he was hit in the head with a machete. And it was the same machete that killed all the rest of his family. And he survived. And he went to, I think, Harvard and Stanford, for engineering.
Wow.
And he would go around to hospitals after the genocide and fix their MRI machines with info that he got from watching YouTube videos. So the guy is just a Chad. He's just absolute king. And he started this company called Zipline, where he has, in Rwanda, he has two launch stations, and he has basically a building that has all these medical products in it, and it has blood in it too. And so he'll get orders from hospitals all throughout Rwanda, and they'll say, hey, you know, I need, like, O positive blood, and I need, you know, some syringes or whatever. It's mostly blood, I think. And so they take the blood, they put it in a box, they, like, you know, wrap it up, make sure it's protected, put it in a box. It goes onto this drone, which is like, and it's not like a quadcopter drone, it's like a flying plane drone. And they invented this launch system that, in a third of a second, launches the drone and accelerates it up to 60 miles an hour. And then the drone uses, like, military-grade GPS, cruises to the hospital, releases the package, it drops down, it's undamaged because of the boxing and the packing material, and, like, in 15 minutes, like, something that's, like a four-hour drive away gets the blood that they need. And then the drone turns around, flies all the way back on its own, and, like, just like a fighter jet would on an aircraft carrier, like, a little hook on the back of it catches another little wire that comes up and it falls down on a mat and they pick it up and they're doing like one launch every 90 seconds. Just that's delivering crazy stuff all over the country.
I'm looking at it now. This thing's like impressive.
Yeah, dude. And this guy, I can't remember what his name is, but this dude that survived the Rwanda genocide when he was a kid, like he started the whole thing, went through a bunch of iterations for his drones and stuff like that. And now they're doing like deliveries with a different type of drone. This is like a quadcopter that has another little drone that's like on a wire attached below it, and then it hovers over your house, it's like a package carrying drone, like drops down on a wire, It can also position itself with one turbine or fan or whatever blade on the back, and then it'll drop off like food, or he's hoping like you can do, well, you actually can do like prescription meds or whatever. And then he's hoping, his proposition at the end of the video is that hopefully someday they can do like a much bigger drone that drops like an ambulance pod that you like load a person into, and then it picks them back up and then flies to the hospital with a person.
Dude.
To avoid traffic. It's just so sick.
So it's like, that'd be like that, like from the, it'd be like from Batman when he gets picked up, only just like with a drone and in a pod.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. He didn't say that that's in the works, but that's what he's hoping for. And I feel like that's like the logical like evolution of the technology. So.
That's really impressive. I mean.
Yeah. It's fucking so sweet. So awesome. So yeah, that was my.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to watch that video. It's only a 22 minute video on YouTube. That's pretty.
Yeah. Yeah. It's his YouTube channel has so many cool videos. There's like the glitter bomb for people that like steal packages.
I was gonna say I think I recognize him from the glitter bomb one.
Yeah.
Yep. And like the fart machine or the fart can smell in it too. Those were funny.
Yep. He made those. So yeah, that was my morale phase. It was something that was just really cool. My lighten your day up. I think they've made like hundreds of thousands or like millions of deliveries already. So
it's awesome. And I guess its benefit is, so there, I mean, forgive any ignorance, but is there still violence there? Like
no, dude, still like Rwanda. So he goes over the country and he says, everyone is super friendly.
Right.
Their crime rate is like below that of the United States and their economy is growing way faster, than the United States is. And like, which I think this is the coolest part. The last Saturday of every month, everyone goes out and just does community service. They like pick up trash and like sweep the streets, and they just go out and do community service for the whole day. And that's all they do on the last Saturday of every month. And he said, yeah, everyone is super happy and just super pleasant to deal with.
I mean, when you've had pretty much everything taken from you to like the bare minimum.
Yeah.
That seems like a fucking easy thing to do to keep your community invested in itself.
Yeah. I mean, imagine like how unifying of a force is a genocide. Obviously, the genocide is terrible.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, it will, like, much like 9/11, like, bring the whole country together. And it seems like that's the result of it.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying, and I agree. And, I mean, really this is more so, like, because of how the country's laid out, that's the means of getting meaningful health supplies to medical supplies to people is tough. So this is a kind of a workaround.
Yeah, I think the roads are kind of clogged up. There's a lot of like motorcycles, which is another workaround to it. But I think these things, they have them in the U.S. too. But I think they're mostly used in Rwanda for now. But they're in the U.S. as well. So I think the delivery one for like you like ordering like a meal. This is the other argument for it, was like we have people that are ordering like a meal for one person, and it's on like Grubhub or whatever, not Grubhub or Uber Eats something, and like someone in like a 2-ton vehicle burning gasoline drives to go get it and then drives it to your house. It's like, this would be so much better served and more efficient and cheaper if it was done with a drone that ran on electricity. Like even if it was electricity that was provided by burning fossil fuels, it would be more efficient to run the drone, and it would be less congestion in the roads too, which is a huge problem in the United States.
I mean, fucking, driving to Boston, when we went to Boston, I was so stressed. I was so happy that the fucking hotel was like immediately off the exit. It's like, oh, get off the highway, you're here.
Yeah. Like, Boston's, yeah, I hate fucking that.
Tough.
Yeah. Dude, I hate when there's traffic, dude, I can't do it. I instantly hate the place. Yeah. Traffic, I'm like, that place is a fucking shithole, dude. Get me out of here. I don't ever want to go there again. Get me out. It could be the greatest place ever. Shithole. Don't want to go there again.
So you're not really a Disney fan?
No. I mean, I went there once, but dude, it was too many people.
Yeah.
It was insane. Like, dude, I bet there was... We were in whichever park has the Star Wars stuff in it, dude. I bet there was... It's not even a huge park. There was probably I don't know, this could be completely off. I'm guessing at least 10,000 people in there, probably 20,000, maybe even more than that. I don't know. It was crazy. Like, we walked to the gate when it opened, and it's like, oh, the wait time for the ride you want to go on is 3 hours. It's like, how? Who is there already? I literally walked, like, it just opened. Like, what is going on?
Who is here?
Yeah, it's crazy, dude. Too many people.
I know. But apparently, we, according to Elon Musk, we have an underpopulation problem.
Underpopulation? I know. Well, like, we're not having enough children.
Yeah.
To support like the future, like support the current generation when we all get old and useless, and have to live off everybody else. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Shapiro had a good point, and he said I think it was Russell Brand. He saw. Shared a statistic that the more prosperous a country becomes, the less children you have with it. And I never really thought of it, but I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. It's probably just in the data. You probably just want, look at this graph or whatever. But
yeah, well, because he was like, oh, you have children. Like, you know, typically, like, building and developing countries or states have a lot of agricultural, and you use your kids as free labor. So having a lot of kids is kind of like...
Oh, yeah.
Built off on that.
Child labor.
not endorsing it, but hey, it exists, right?
Yeah, it does. So, anyhow.
But, yeah, that was a good episode, though. I enjoyed that. I've enjoyed all these books and looking forward to the next one.
I am, too.
Farsight's next, right?
Yep.
And they've definitely continued to drop hints at...
The Lion.
The Lion.
It's going to be this is going to be a fifth book, and it's going to be called The Lion.
And we're seeing Terminators potentially coming.
100% coming.
Yeah, 100% coming. And I don't know what better way to release a Space Hulk box with new Terminators, new Gene Stealers.
Dude.
With the theme being the most iconic Terminator model being Dark Angels.
Yeah, don't even get me started. They did a Space Hulk. Yeah.
Take my money.
Yeah, take it. Right now.
Yeah, space. I mean, this is how. I mean, listen. I think it'd be really cool. They've kind of got it all set up here, right? They've got the damn terrain out there. How easy would it be to be like to do something like a Space Hulk?
It'd be like, so like they've of box. They have to have it. They have to. They're so dumb if they don't have it. If they don't have it, they're retarded.
Here's 20 Gene Stealers with a unique twist on the boarding action styles of game, and here's fucking 5 new of the new Terminators.
Oh man. Yeah, I'd buy that in a heartbeat.
Right? 100%.
Yep.
But yeah, so great episode. We are continuing with our faction focus. We will be releasing a Tau episode next week, and we just released our Necron episode, which I think was one of the more again, I had a lot of fun going through that. I've really loved the Necron lore. So we'll continue going down that, and honestly, we're obviously when one of these books come out, we'll continue to feed you guys the lore.
Yep. As always, follow us on Instagram at thedroppod40k, and email us at 40kdroppod@gmail.com if you have any requests or want to yell at us or make corrections or whatever. The link to our Instagram is in the description of the episode. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, everyone.